they're gonna hop off. You know, we're gonna be out, like, you know, 70% of the way there. We're gonna be like, all right, helicopter ride. I'm kidding, not helicopter ride.
No,
but no, spaceship ride.
And that's why, I mean, Brian, I know we were talking about it a little bit before the show started about my, how I speak to people on Twitter, because I can get snarky, but for the most part, I try and be nice to people. I know, just a little bit, but there's actually a running joke, and I don't mean to make anybody like uncomfortable at this point, but there's a running joke between me and Freckles and Jessica Green that my haters follow me more than probably anyone else on Twitter and become my friend. Because I try and talk to them like I'll bat you around a little bit. You might bat me around a little bit, but then I'll make a joke. We'll try and, because there's still something of value they have to say. Even if I disagree with 99% of what they have to say, sometimes they say something and I'm like, I disagree with you, but I really need to think about my approach to that. Or why do I think that way? So I think we need more civil discourse. And I know we used to say, oh, people used to have civil discourse. I don't think people ever really did have civil discourse, like, you know, 50, 60. I think people just didn't talk about it because it made them uncomfortable. I think in the 80s, 90s, that's when we started having civil discourse. And then for some reason, it splintered off. I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. And we got to where we're at today. And I think there's a lot of...
Can I challenge that premise a little bit?
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's a matter of the civil discourse has gotten worse, or the matter is that now it's transparently open. You know what I mean? So, like, if you look at, like, the letters that were sent between the founding fathers, they f***ed each other. Like, a lot of them hated each other. And, like, they would write the most vile... each other. And it was hilarious. Like, looking back, it's like, doth Adams have an... like a mule, and it's like, oh, Jefferson's just call him a fat, like, and it catches you off guard. But like, you fast forward to today, and now it's like you go to Twitter and you'd be like, Donald Trump's an, like, the discourse is still the same, but it's just, it's different, right? Before it was, you'd write it in your letter and you'd send it in the mail and it'd get there 13 days later. Now it's you type it into a Twitter, you know, 120 character tweet, and it's around the world in 13 milliseconds. So like, that I think maybe has changed the way we communicate, not so much the what we're communicating. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I agree with you. I was actually going around to that, because I was going to talk about some of those letters. And
really, were you?
I was because I just read about Shay's Rebellion. Well, I'm not going to go into all of that because.
Well, now, I mean, like, Nancy Pelosi just calls Trump morbidly obese on television.
Place in this country where we got to a place in this country in, I would say, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where we started saying like civil discourse. But really, what had happened is we stopped being openly hatred towards people. We just stopped talking about politics, or that old, like, oh, we don't talk about religion or politics.
Boom.
And you started to see in the 80s and 90s where people started talking about, who started talking about, and who I give the most credit to is not politicians, not libertarians, not anybody in politics. I credit comedians for starting in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where they started saying things that might be offensive to you, but were also kind of true. And we started to be able to have this dialogue, and then it started to get where people started to get offended about the things that we're saying, and then it moved into getting not just offended, but having to take up arms and take up action about, you know, what's being said about what's going on, instead of us just talking about it. And I think that's where we're at now, where it's like every group has their own issue, which they probably always have, but now we have to fight for whose is the most valid. And it's, we have to find a way to realize that, like libertarians have been saying forever, it's not all of our issues against each other and who should get the most time. We shouldn't all be having to vie for whose issues are going to get taken care of first. We should look at the people that are causing the issues. We should look at the government that is making us all fight amongst each other. It's the same.
Yep.
It's the same thing that's caused this divide since the beginning of this country. It's always the same thing that causes the divide, is get people to argue amongst themselves so they can't realize who the true oppressor is. I mean, I don't know, or whatever, I don't know. So we have some questions for you, yeah. Brian. I want to,
oh boy.
We should get to them.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and ask some. Yeah. So from Fritz, QS.
What's up, yep. Fritz?
Yep, he said.
Number one, before you ask this question, if you guys ever interact with Fritz on any social media, you gotta make sure you make it a point that he does not know how to pronounce people's names. He has been calling John McAfee, John McAfee, or McAfee for the past year and a half, and it has been driving me crazy. So just please go after him for that.
Fritz is one of the only people on Twitter that's like I'm friends with on Facebook that I talk to. So now I'm gonna make
great.
Him. And he also hasn't had us on his show yet.
Well, his question said, ask him when he's going to have that Fritzcast fella on. And then he said, I kid, ask him what he thinks the best strategy for growing libertarianism on all levels.
Okay. He's coming on soon. I was telling Britt before we got on the air, I just moved. So like I've been moving and that's been crazy for the past like month, basically. So new studio, which is nice. But to his actual question, right? Fritz, you're coming on soon, buddy. I promise. But when the libertarian movement wants to actually have some real long-lasting political success, it goes back to what I've been saying since day one when I started my show in January of 2018. Nobody is going to take the Libertarian Party seriously until the Libertarian Party takes itself seriously. And that requires the Libertarian Party to start acting like a legitimate political party. So here's the reality. People want to vote for winners. If you are going to have a political party that is going to be nothing more than an educational party, then nobody's going to want to join. Because if people want to join an educational party, they'll join a fucking book club. They're not going to join a political party. Political parties are to win elections. If your goal is to be the Libertarian Party, then your goal should be to win Libertarian candidates in their local elections, national elections, and state elections. But for some reason, the Libertarian Party still can't seem to get its head around in terms of what our direction is. So I think we need to have a real come to Jesus moment in terms of what the actual direction of the Libertarian Party is going to be. And if the Libertarian Party decides that it's not going to be that of actually winning elections, then I might need to reconsider whether or not I'm going to keep my membership. Because at this point, like, what's the point? I'm hoping that Dr. Jorgensen will be a strong candidate and will be the legitimate, you know, third solution to what we've been presented as, you know, the lesser of two evils in Trump versus Biden. I'm seeing a lot of people in my home district who are actually like sharing her memes organically. And I was like, oh my God, it's happening. But we'll see if that actually turns into votes. I mean, I'm not super optimistic because America just seems to be, you know, in just like this tailspin of just, you know, it's constant feuding. But the Libertarian Party had a great opportunity in 2016, completely, you know, ruined that opportunity. I dare say they had a great opportunity in 2020. They'll have a better opportunity in 2024. And that, I think seeing in 2024, because it'll be kind of like that, like restart button again, that will be indicative of what is going to happen going forward. If the Libertarian Party is not going to take itself seriously, then I think it will be time for libertarians who are politically motivated and using that as a means to actually enact some change. They might need to find a new home, but we'll see. I'm optimistic. I'm still a card carrying member, and if people want to join the LP and help make it better, use my link, lp.org/Brian Nichols Show.
I think that we actually are moving in the right step. I thought it was going to be Jacob Hornberger. I don't want to disparage anything about Jacob Hornberger. I like him. I think he is a nice man. I think he's a smart man. I think it was a good choice that he's not our candidate because he is exactly what you're talking about. He is the librarian of the LP. He is going to teach you and he is going to, you know,
he's a professor.
You. Exactly. Yeah. Where Joe is more of the politician, and I'm the first one to say we found out Joe was going to be the candidate live on one of our live shows, and we were all like, because it was also a group of pro-life women, and we don't, you know, Joe has a stance of she doesn't want abortion in the platform of the LP, so we were all very like, what's going on? But I think a lot of us have came around since then, because Joe is that person that could actually get the job done and get us to be a more serious party. I also think that it would have been a mosh, and I think it would have been a terrible, terrible misstep for the LP to have a mosh this year. Joe being in this year and getting to like really shine and show what she can do sets her up for 2024, because there's no way in hell she's winning this year. Let's just call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. I know we can all like pretend, but like people still have that like automatic, yes. Like I would vote for a third party if other people voted for him, but then my vote won't count. Like that's just the, like, it just comes out of there. They don't even think about it. Like you just say third party and that.
I want an outsider, but I'm not going to vote for the third party candidate.
I need to vote for the lesser of two evils, because it's like, it just, you just want to
turn
the button off in the back of their head. Like, okay. I know, I've heard it. And we need roads, whatever.
The NPC needs to hit the restart button.
Yeah. Like we get it. So this, yeah, just, it's okay. I understand you have your standard things and whatever taxes are the price we pay to live in a society. I don't know. Whatever else you're going to tell me, I've heard it 1,000 times, because that's all you know about libertarianism. So, but I think that Joe has a chance to change that. Joe has a chance. And I think it's a little, like, I do think it's a little gimmicky also, like, but she did really well in the debates. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to discredit her or take anything away from her. But it just happens to be a good year that we have two super old white dudes running for president, and the libertarians are the only ones that are like, hey, you guys had like a lot of ladies and a lot of people of color that you could have picked from on the left, especially, and you went with like the old dude with dementia. So you blocked a lot of credibility. So look, we have this lady who's very smart. She is a like a genius woman, understands. Yep. You know, policy, understands the libertarian movement. She is for, she could get a lot of stuff done that both sides want, and especially the left, she seems to kind of be like courting them right now. And I think
she very much is courting them. And I find that to be a little bit of a turnoff, I'll say that, but I guess whatever works.
I agree with you. I can't.
Here's the thing though, is that 29% of Americans didn't vote in 2016. So of the 29% of Americans that don't vote, we can at least assume half of them, right, are going to be left-leaning. So we need at least half of those people to say, we're going to vote for the third party this year. And the sad reality is that we might need to get some of those folks who maybe are our 65, 70% allies on topics. Like, we're going to come, like, again, spaceship going through, you know, space to Liberty Land, like, they're gonna hop off. You know, we're gonna be out, like, you know, 70% of the way there. We're gonna be like, all right, helicopter ride. I'm kidding, not helicopter ride. Spaceship ride. Yeah, no, but like, no, that's where we're gonna have to say, like, hey, listen, this is where we're gonna have our difference of opinion. Like the Tulsi Gabbards of the world. I will have a conversation with Tulsi, and I will go to bat with her on probably 65% of the issues. As soon as we start talking about universal health care and, you know, universal whatever it is that she wants to do next. Sorry, I can't. I'll work with you. I'll work with you as soon as we can get close to that.
I agree with you. Tulsi, I am infamous at this point for calling Tulsi Gabbard a supervillain, because she's beautiful. She tells you all the things. Like, seriously,
plays the ukulele, goes surfing.
She is very much that 80s Saturday morning cartoon supervillain that you're like, wow, she seems too good to be true. And she's like, no, we want to end the wars. No, we want all people to like come together. We want more liberty. We also want to take away all your guns. Like, you know, like, whoa, what happened? Like, all
she's the fine print candidate.
Yeah. It's like, no, all of a sudden you're just like in Skeletor's lair and you don't know what happened. Like, cause it seemed like everything was cool a minute ago, you know? So,
well, that escalated rather quickly.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
ukulele playing and surfing to Skeletor's lair.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I'm actually, yeah, so whatever. But yeah, no, like, I agree with you on that, but also I go a little bit further, because I probably, you know, the purity test, I got to make sure that I get some of that.
We're not all libertarians at all. It's okay.
I'm like the worst libertarian. Trust me, I get told every day.
Me too. Great.
Yeah, me too. And at a certain point, I'm just going to stop calling myself that, because, like, honestly, if you don't want me, I'll just do my own thing.
Just put a question mark at the end of it. Like, I'm a libertarian.
Yeah. Like, I've got a loud voice. Like, you know,
I've been told I'm not.
Yeah.
Andrew Breitbart used to say that the politics is always downstream of culture. And one of the problems is that the libertarians have not engaged in the cultural conversation really at all. You know, the only person I can really think of that's been daring to brave the cultural conversation right now explicitly has been really, well, I'd say a couple, you know, prominent libertarians. I'd say, you know, Dave Smith from more of a, you know, a true principle standpoint. Chris Spangle from the big channel We Are Libertarians. He has been doing a phenomenal job outlining more of like the black approach to what's happening. He's on a podcast called The Pat Down with Ms. Pat. And Ms. Pat is a very prominent stand-up comedian, actually just on Rogan last year. Actually, this was a year ago or so, like last week. And Chris is a co-host for that show. He actually met her at his day job over in Indianapolis, and she was looking for somebody to help her with her podcast. And he ended up helping her, and he joined the show. And he basically is like the quote unquote like token white guy on the show. But it was a chance for him to be able to learn more about not only her culture, but vice versa, for her to learn more about a white culture, because for Miss Pat, she had grown up in a community that there were no white people. So like, it was a great chance for them to have an open dialogue and for like the listener to hear these kind of conversations happen real time, because, and it goes back to, I think that the point that we made earlier, and it's actually funny how things happen the way they do. I just posted this on my Facebook page. You can follow it at Beat Equals Liberty, by the way, about, you know, having difficult conversations. Right. And part of the problem where we are today is that we really are a couple of generations now of people who have been told, don't talk about this stuff. Don't talk about race. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion, because it's uncomfortable. And what we've done is basically we have pushed all these things that we're not supposed to talk about underground, and it just festers. It's like, I mean, it's like a volcano, right? It is the pressure builds and builds and builds. It's only a matter of time before that pressure lets go and the volcano erupts. And that's what we're seeing right now, is that all these things that we've been told not to talk about, now they're the pressure's built and it's coming to the surface. And we're seeing that manifest itself in these protests. We're seeing it manifest itself in the resentment that people have towards police officers. We're seeing that across the nation right now. And instead of addressing the underlying issues of why that resentment exists, we're just trying to stop the lava flow. And I think that's, again, it goes back to addressing the causes of the problem. I mean, we've come full circle really in the show, starting out, what do we have to do? Address the fundamental issues that start the problems. You're not going to go in as a doctor and you say, well, you seem to have a cold, but you have a cut in your left hand, so maybe they're connected. I'm going to cut your left hand off. Like, that's a little drastic. Like, let's actually look and see, like, what's causing the cold. Is it allergies? Is it, you know, is it a seasonal cold? And then once you diagnose it, you address the symptoms. We're not doing that as a society. Yeah. And partly because we've been told, don't go to the doctor. I mean, look at it. The doctor is solving the problem. Solving the problem in our situation is having the conversation. And we're not having those conversations because we've been told not to.
And I think we've been trained by parties, even libertarians. I think if you look at the left, a lot of times, if you even approach it like a doctor situation, they'll look at it and go, he has a cold. The best thing might be to do is give him this medicine. But if he doesn't feel like he wants to take it, or it might hurt him or something, like we don't want to hurt him, so let's just let this happen. And the right, you know, a lot of times has that. Well, you know what? Cut his hand off, then he can't touch things. Libertarians tend to, like I said, I always feel like they're the smartest people in the room, but they're also the people in the room that will not speak about something if they don't know the answer before.
Yes.
A lot of times. And it is so frustrating, because they'll keep quiet on issues, or even, it's not, I know so many people are going to get mad right now about this. They will talk about something, they will talk about an issue, and they will direct it back to the one minute thing that they know about that issue that they are so smart on, and they will ignore every other aspect and every other element of that issue and say, but I know this, and they keep hammering that point home. Like, yeah, we get it, but there's other issues that are going on around it. Like, it's the same thing as all these libertarians. Well, if we defund the police, like we get it. We know without police can't kill people if there's no police. Like, we get it. But somebody else will. Like, yes. Somebody else is going to, like, we have to discuss every other thing. We have to be able to come in and say, we're not the right where we're just going to chop your hand off, and we're not the left where we're just going to care about your feelings. Because I really do, I come down hard a lot of times on the left, but I do think there's something to be said about like a bleeding heart liberal. I think a lot of these people come from a place of, they care about people, they're just going about it the wrong way. And I think that the right want to get things done the same way, not the same way the left does, but they kind of all want to come to the same place, but they have two very vastly different ways of doing it. And libertarians have a great opportunity to kind of bridge that gap. But instead, what we do is pick the minutia of both of them until people are so sick of listening to us talk that they just walk away.
Yes. We're insufferable and we're right. That's the problem.
Yeah. Oh, I call myself insufferable for sure. I'm the most annoying person on Twitter, I'm pretty sure. So
you're everywhere. Oh my God. I was like going through somebody's replies. Oh, you know who it was? It was the, what's his name? The chop guy.
Raz.
Oh, Raz.
Raz. I was like, hey, I'm on her show today.
God, just someone like randomly getting mad at me for using the word literally in a way they found incorrectly this morning was like a 2-hour fight. And I'm just like, I hate this.
Is that not Twitter in a nutshell right there? Like, what's Twitter like? I got in a fight with somebody for using the word literally and not the context they wanted me to use it in. Yeah, like, I think that's Twitter.
I think it's funny. I think that's why our show is good. Because people get so mad at you because of the things you say. But then if you look at the things people say about me, people tell me like, oh, you're the nicest person on Twitter. You're so sweet. You're so nice. But if you come on the show and like you're on the show, like I'm the one that's like, fuck, like I'm the one that's like, no. And Freckles
get it all out on Twitter. That's the thing.
Yeah. Freckles is usually like, to that point that like we're the level-headed one. I come on here and I'm like, well, I'm angry. I'm surly. I don't, you know, so I can tell how many people don't listen to the show.
Well, I get it though. Like I'm so snarky on Twitter. So what I'll usually do is I'll be very snarky and then I'll just mute somebody. Cause I'm just like, I don't want to deal with it. Oh. It's like, I'm like that meme from the, from Endgame with Chris Evans. And it's like, no, I don't think I will. Like, I'm not going to argue anymore. It's just, it's not productive. And I think that's kind of the way I've approached politics going forward through, especially through not just the rest of the year, but I think this is going to be my approach going forward is like, I'm only going to engage people who are approaching conversations in good faith. If somebody instantly comes in and I know they're going to be toxic and they're going to have no like productive input to the conversation, I'm sorry, I'm done. I'm not going to engage that person. But if somebody asks a legitimate question, I found that the best way to actually have that conversation with them is to implement like the Socratic method approach and get them to rationalize their position for you. And if you can come to, so actually I'll segue to a book you guys should look at if you haven't already. It's How to Have Impossible Conversations with Peter Boghossian. It is a phenomenal read and I've been recommending it to everybody because it really speaks to where we are as a society in 2020 is how to have those impossible conversations. And it focuses on getting you and the person that you're having a conversation with to come to some fundamental agreements and then to have the other person kind of flesh out where you guys fell apart on your agreement, right? So if you come to the same conclusion, like we both want people to not live in poverty. Great. Now let's start back at square one. So people are in poverty, how did we get here? And then reverse engineer. And then you can start to figure, okay, so this is where in your life you had a personal experience that you thought that, you know, because a business did something bad to a person, that means all businesses are bad. Okay, so that's the point in your life where you had this moment that has impacted your entire worldview. Now, instead of trying to address the merits of you know, Murray Rothbard versus Marx, now you can have a conversation about, you know, businesses and how not all businesses are bad and try to address that particular issue for that one person. And as you're doing that, here's the benefit. If you're having these conversations in a public forum or in something like what we're doing here with a podcast or what have you, is now other people who had the exact same experience as that person did, you know, when they maybe their family got screwed by a business, now they're hearing not only that person's story and empathizing, but they're empathizing with the solution that we're presenting. And they're empathizing with the people who maybe who've experienced that same thing, but have changed the way that they approach the world because they saw a different way. They saw a different perspective. And that's, again, going back to originally the point of this whole, you know, the whole way we got into this conversation is we do need to speak to the issues that really matter to people. And we're not going to learn what those issues are until we ask them questions. If we are instantly going into a conversation telling people what they need to care about instead of asking them what they care about, then they're not going to to listen. And I think until we start to approach things in that perspective, then we're just going to be bashing our heads against the wall, and it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, I agree. I know we have more questions. We should get to them because
they're both from the same person. They're from Ankur Agarwal.
Ankur, what's up?
Yeah, his first question is, here would be my question. A conflict is brewing in this country that has already become ugly and threatens to become much worse. What are the best strategies to calm it down peacefully, and how can the LP take leadership in helping out?
Ask questions and listen. And once we listen, is then, again, it goes to when we're listening to what the problems are, then you can start to you know, kind of figure, okay, here's the problem that the person's presenting is to them. How does it apply to our principles? If we instantly go in and say, principles, and we're just like shooting principles at them, and it has no impact on their life, like they're like, I don't give a shit about property rights right now. Like, I'm more worried about name whatever the issue is in their life, right? If we're approaching that issue as our number one issue, they're not going to listen. They're going to turn away. So what we need to do is say, what's up? Talk to me. What is your problem? And let them explain what their issue is, whether it's an issue about climate change, whether it's an issue with police brutality, whether it's an issue about the government lockdowns, whatever the issue is, ask the question, then just shut up and listen. And this is actually one of the things I do in my sales training with my team. Is I say, you know, one thing I want everybody to do is to practice active listening. And what that requires is to find yourself talking probably about 60% less than the other person. So you should be speaking maybe like 40 to 35% of the time. The other percent of the time should be the other person, because they should be telling you a story. So if you're asking open-ended questions, that's what I like to do is if you're trying to elicit a actual response from somebody that you actually want to hear the response, you can learn, you need to ask open-ended questions. It's very much like in lawyer, right? If you're asking a direct question, it's, did you do this on this day, yes or no? Versus, what did you do on May 14th? And then and the conversation is different, right? So in May 14th, oh, I did this. And you can elaborate. And then that gives you the chance as the person asking the question to learn more information. So to Anchor's question, we need to ask more questions. We need to listen. And then once we listen, we need to take what we've heard and apply it to the principle and then present it in a form of value and showing, you know, whether it's a video. So for example, Matt Kibbe over at Free the People is doing some of the best work in this, telling stories that appeal to people's emotions. And here's the reality, right? Ben Shapiro, what's his most famous tweet? Facts don't care about your feelings. Bah, it kills me. Because you know what? Here's the reality. People care about feelings though. Facts don't care about feelings, but people care about feelings. So what we need to do is we need to appeal to those feelings. And the way we appeal to those feelings are by telling stories. And you know, Matt Kibbe has been doing great work. I mean, he did a whole documentary with Thomas Massey about living off the grid. I have shared that video with my lefty friends. None of them knew Thomas Massey was a Republican congressman. Not one. But they loved the documentary because they were like, he's living a sustainable lifestyle. He's entirely off the grid. He, you know, farm, all of his farm is all his. Like, he's not, you know, he's not having his massive carbon footprint. As soon as I say he's a libertarian Republican congressman from Kentucky, their jaws hit the floor. And that's how we win, because we show people, listen, we all want the same thing. We want a clean environment. Look at this guy actually doing it. Oh, by the way, he's completely the opposite of what you think he is in terms of his politics. And that is how we win, by showing people, again, what our principles look like in action and how they actually do end up saying what they're going to accomplish, what we said they're going to accomplish. In this case, you know, Massey, it's a clean environment, whether it's talking about defunding the police. I mean, telling stories and using those stories, that's how we're going to be able to change people's hearts and minds and actually have some success in lasting libertarian principles there, Anchor. Good question. I miss Anchor too. He used to live in Philly and he moved. So bye, Anchor. Yeah, good guy. I used to be the chair for AFF Philly here. And just in life, I've got too much going on. I just couldn't give it the attention I deserve. But in one of my events before he actually moved out of Philly, I got to meet Anchor. Great guy. So thank you, Anchor, for the question.
Awesome. Here's another one from him then.
Okay.
Also, how do we feel about Michael Malice's observation that the corporate press is the enemy of the people? If we agree, 100%. What can podcast hosts and listeners do better to more quickly displace their influence?
To displace corporate media's influence, be louder, honestly. And that means sometimes utilizing channels that corporate press isn't utilizing. So, like, think about it. Where did podcasts really get their reach? And it was using alternative forms of media like iTunes or Twitter or Facebook for marketing, MySpace for artists, Spotify for up and coming artists. There are alternatives out there that are bypassing corporate media. And I think what is the responsibility for folks, especially in the Liberty Movement, to reach people is to constantly be utilizing those new forms of technology and those new innovations to help promote Liberty. So if you're looking for open source, so let's take his question directly for corporate media, right? If you truly want an open source like means of having a conversation without any gatekeepers, Minds.com. Bill Ottman made Minds.com. It will only be taken, any content is only taken down if it's illegal, right? So if government officials come in, that's the only time. So how do we bypass? That's how you bypass, is you start to have those market solutions start to rise up. And then it's on us to actually support them, right? So it's one thing for the solution to rise up. Now it's on us to actually utilize it. So I've been going on my way, and I actually made it sure I downloaded the app and put it on my phone because I want to start using Minds more frequently. Because, I mean, guys, I've been flagged on Facebook probably like 5 or 6 times on my Facebook page for things I found on Facebook. And I'm like, how am I getting flagged for something I shared that I found on Facebook? But I am. And it's because I think I'm a libertarian page. And I know that it's just probably a matter of 1 or 2 more strikes. My Facebook page is gone forever. So if that's the case, all I have is Twitter. Twitter is not exactly libertarian friendly. So, you know, you have to prepare for the future. And I think that means setting yourself up so you're safe, but also, you know, making sure that you are constantly having a means of controlling, you know, your ability to have your own message conveyed. And that's kind of, you know, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Jason Stapleton too much, but that's one of the things he talks about, is controlling your income, controlling the networks, being basically your own little island, that in the event that it came down to it, that you're able to be self-sufficient. And that's kind of the way I think the world's going to go too, is that while we're as connected as ever, we also are going to find ourselves becoming as independent as ever, because I think we're starting to realize that the people that were supposed to be like the betters that were looking out for our better interests, they don't know anything. Like, it's like that meme. It's like, I need an adult. And then you realize you're an adult. And it's like, I need an adult, you're adult. And it's like, there are no more adults. Like, you realize now, I think a lot of people are, that the emperor has no clothes. Like, the people who are in positions of power, they're as clueless as the rest of us are. They're pretending. And I mean, Cuomo, he did 111 straight days of those stupid press conferences acting like he knew everything that was happening in New York. I mean, sure, he sent thousands of old nursing home people to die because he was putting COVID patients back in. But man, he did those press conferences like he knew exactly what he was talking about. And I mean, that, I think that's part of the problem, is that you have these institutions that have so co-opted the mainstream media. I mean, the Democrat Party is essentially the corporate media at this point. And it's not, I don't think it's controversial to acknowledge that anymore, is it? Like, I think we all can acknowledge, like, pretty much all the, I mean, except for Fox, pretty much, and Fox is becoming more mainstream day by day. They're all pretty much, you know, a variation of some press arm. And that's not just like hyperbole. I mean, like, George Stephanopoulos, ABC, I think he is, right? He used to literally be like the head of the press for the Clintons. Like, that he's acting as an objective journalist. Chris Cuomo is Andrew Cuomo's brother. Like, how are we looking at the media and thinking they're not biased? How they're not, you know, they're objective? Okay. Like, and I think people are starting to not buy it anymore. And that's why I think podcasts, independent media, like, I mean, YouTube is probably going to turn into more of a corporate entity at some point. So I'm sure like library.io, that's, you know, other alternatives like that, they're going to start to crop up more and more. You know, the marketplace, it's going to answer. And it already is starting to do some stuff like that. I mean, Dave, what's the thing that Dave Rubin just did with Peterson? Wasn't it like an independent media thing that they were doing?
I heard they were talking about it. I didn't know that it was like released or anything. But
it's like a pay for media, right?
I
it's something like, so like people actually pay a subscription. It's like a Netflix. You pay like an MRC basically. And that's what you pay for media. But, you know, that's, it's an opportunity cost. You're willing to pay that, you know, that recurring fee, because now you're curating media that you want to see. And that again comes down to us engaging in that marketplace.
Yeah, I think I would add to that too, that we need to be entertaining. I hate to say it, I've been saying this for months and months. If you're not entertaining, people don't want to watch you. People watch MSNBC because they're engaged in what they're saying. They agree with what they're saying. They're entertained by what they're saying. Mm-hmm. People watch Fox because they're entertained by what they're saying. They're engaged in what they're saying. When Tucker Carlson speaks or Rachel Maddow speaks, even if every once in a while you're like, you know, you're mm-hmm. still like, oh, you know, like a lot of that is what I believe in. They're saying it really loud. And they're saying it really angry. And I like that.
It's
or, you know, the, it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I think that we cannot forget that. I listen to a lot of libertarian podcasts, and I've watched our show from the beginning. And sorry, Freckles, I'm just going to say it about us. Sometimes we're f-ing boring. And I'm like, if it's boring, who's going to watch it? So it's like, let's try. I mean, I think we've both said it though, where we've been like, okay, we want to be entertaining. Number one, sorry that the news has to be that way. First of all, we're not the news. We are not the news.
The most trusted name in news.
But you said something earlier. You said that you hate the quote that Ben Shapiro has, that facts don't care about your feelings. And then immediately after that, you went, ugh. You had a visceral reaction. That is not, facts don't care about your feelings is the greatest slogan of all time, because it's literally makes people feel something. They either love it or they hate it. It's not about facts. It's not about your feelings. It's not about facts. It is literally about your feelings, about that quote. That's why Ben Shapiro is Ben Shapiro. That's why he is the way he is, because that man, I used to agree with a lot of what he said. I disagree with a lot, but he is passionate about the way he speaks. He knows how to speak to an audience.
Smart as a whip.
He is, he's extremely smart.
Have you heard that his wife is a doctor?
Is she? Yeah. Holy cow. Breaking news.
It's the same thing. But on the other end of that, and I'm probably going to get hate, whatever, is that we have Steven Crowder, who is literally a court jester. I mean, I think he's a complete idiot. But he entertains people. He's entertaining the way he's like Steven
Crowder. Credit where credit's due, though. His Change My Mind segment. I love his Change My Mind segment. I do.
I'm not saying I disagree with him. I just sometimes he gets on my nerves. And he even says he's a jackass. Like, he is. He's like
it's a
he shit. Reminds me of that kid in high school that thought he was a lot cooler than he really was. That you just want to take down a notch and you're just like, but that's my personal feeling. That's just my personal feeling about him. But he makes people feel a certain way. Ben Shapiro makes every time Ben Shapiro speaks, even if you find out later maybe he was wrong about something, he very rarely is, though. He's very astute when it comes to things. The way he speaks about certain things, it's like even when it's like the overall subject he might be wrong on, he is very astute and, you know, just
presenting the facts that make him sound better.
Yeah, but the way he says things makes people that rally around Ben Shapiro, it's like a win for them every time. It's a win. And when Steven Crowder kind of does that, like, owns
the libs.
Yeah, owns the libs. Like it makes people like, oh, yeah, that's why you see all those videos on Facebook where you just go, you know, owning libs, owning the over and over.
And then suddenly Trump makes sense.
Yeah.
That's why Trump's there. He owned the libs.
I'll say this. I don't know how much of Trump is like genius or stupidity. I really don't. But I think he says, and he said something a couple of weeks ago where he says, on, you know, a chokehold sounds like a good thing. Like, I don't remember his exact phrase. He said it making a chokehold sound like a good thing and then went on to say the rest of it. And I guarantee in my mind, nobody can convince me otherwise, the reason he started out saying that a chokehold seems like a good thing at first is because he knew that people would take that first part of it and cut off the rest of what he said, where it's like, it turns out it's a really bad thing, blah, blah. He knew people would take the headline of it and run with it, and then he could turn around and be like, that's not what I said. He knew, he didn't even have to do it. He knew that his followers, the people that support him, would turn around and be like, oh, look, they're so stupid. Look what
they're very good people on both sides. Exact same thing.
He did the exact same thing. He starts every time. It's like he has it down to a science. You're telling me that this guy doesn't know when he says the most awful thing and then comes back around and you read the whole quote and you're like, hey, man, they really twisted that. Like, what they really twisted what he said. Because he went on to explain it, and they just ran with the search part. I know that guy has to know. I know the people around him have to know that what he's saying it on purpose so that he can make, so that he can, so that he, cause he knows he doesn't have to create a straw man at that point.
Right.
Because the media will do it for him and he can just be like, look what they did.
And that's the genius of Trump. And I think that speaks to a lot of what Trump is. There's no substance to Trump. Trump is a marketer and that's all well and good, but I think it's indicative of Republicans to acknowledge what he is and what he isn't. And he's not a principled person. He's not a Republican by what it used to mean when I was a Republican in 2010 for the Tea Party. He's Trump. And I think what the danger of the GOP right now is that they're attaching Trump as he himself has become a principle. Like, either you believe in the Trump or you don't. It's like us with the nap, you know? So if you don't believe in the Trump, then you can't be part of the GOP. And I think that might be a big issue for the GOP, especially after 2024. Because, like, I mean, 2020, either you're with Trump or you're not with Trump in the GOP. 2024 is going to be, you know, kind of like the moment, like, okay, what's the GOP going to become? Is it going to be the Trump party still? Or is it going to be, you know, more of like this Rand Paul, Ben Shapiro, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz party? Or is it going to be a Tucker Carlson, Tom Cotton kind of party? And I think we're kind of at this tipping point where you see both of those sides starting to rise up in the GOP because they know what's up. Like, if Trump loses in 2020, like, it's on. It's game time for 2024. And that's what they're looking for is basically to see if Trump loses, it's time to take over. If he wins, I think 2024 could actually be very interesting. I think you could easily see another one of the Trumps. Like, Donald Trump Jr. could easily be like the, like, oh, well, I'm going to run next. And he could run on that name and the principle of Trump. And I think a lot of the Trump supporters would stay on board with him because it's the last name. And the Trump has Trump become the principle. And what does Trump sell best? His name.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when this whole thing started with Trump, I think most people, most educated people, knew that they were throwing a Hail Mary in with Trump. Because let's be honest, we all thought Hillary was going to win. I think everybody thought Hillary was going to win. And Trump was like that Hail Mary shot that they like, okay, we know that this isn't the guy, but this guy is polarizing enough. This guy is going to rally a base. So we'll let this happen. Even though the establishment all pretended that they, like, this is not, like, Ted Cruz and all of them grandstanding, like, I'm not gonna, yeah, you all knew what was going on. Every one of you knew, because the GOP knew at that point, you can't stand on principle, not against Hillary, not against feelings. Exactly what you said. You can't stand on principle against feelings.
Yep.
And that's, the truth of the matter is every time Hillary Clinton goes on the air to speak about how she was wronged, I have to laugh because I'm like, no, you were just outsmarting Trump.
And that's why she hates it so much. That's why she feels she was wrong. Because, I mean, I think honestly, losing to Trump was worse than losing the election. She could have lost the election to anyone else. I don't think it would have bothered her as much as it did with Trump.
No, and I don't think she would have lost the election to anyone else. But they threw that like last quarter, like just, you know, 2 seconds on the clock. And it was just, you know, it was just a great, like, they had to put him in there, and it was either going to fail spectacularly or he was just going to be president for life. Like, but it was also a very dangerous game to play because now you have people that legitimately think, like, he is, like, a marathon runner. Like, Trump, like, this is the play that we always play. Like, no, man, that was what you do when you're losing the game. Now we have to get, you know, back in order. I feel like Trump has kind of feel like Trump hasn't done the things that I would have wanted Trump to do that he said he was going to do. He, you know, you can blame the Republicans, you can blame Congress, you can blame whatever, but really he's their leader. If you go to McDonald's and they don't make your burger right, you don't yell at the guy that made it, you yell at the manager. So we still have Obamacare. We had a huge chance to scale back abortion, and instead now, like, we could have changed healthcare, we could have changed those things. So instead we have Obamacare, and now we're moving towards, like, even more of a Medicare state, and now we have some states that just let you kill babies, like, the day before they're due. Like,
yep, no big deal.
This is what happens when you throw in that, like, that play. Like, then you have this dangerous situation where it becomes volatile, because you threw the Molotov cocktail in, you immediately dispersed the crowd, but then what's coming back in when smoke's cleared is not what, it's not what you wanted. So right. I don't know what's going to happen in 2024. My gut tells me that it's going to be a huge Trump win, but and I think that's why we have all this stuff going on right now, because now the left is trying to do what the right
did.
It's
their Hail Mary. Yeah.
Yeah. They're throwing it in. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people that I don't know what they're going to do. I think that the smartest thing that Republicans could do is kind of what they did, is where they went in and said, like, yeah, George Floyd's murder was ridiculous. We need to stop. I think more Republicans need to be like, yeah, we need police reform. We need, it's like, you can see it. You can see where they're trying to unify on this issue, and the left is like, oh no, we're not let, like the left, it's like it could backfire. So the left has to continue to double down. If they
know what Trump should do on this,
then it could unify.
Trump should just decriminalize weed.
I think so too.
If he did, he'd win.
Yep, that's the thing. Like, gosh, a lot of people are one issue voters on that thing alone. Like, yeah, probably most of the South, like random northern states that haven't legalized yet. Just, yeah, no.
November 1st, he did that. I can guarantee you'd win.
I wonder if he will.
I wouldn't be surprised. We're at the point where, like, yeah, I mean, it's Hail Mary every single fucking play, right? It seems like. And that's kind of what politics in 2020 has become. And for better or for worse, right? If he were to go that route, he would only – I don't know if you can legally do that, because it'd be hard, because it, now you're starting to get into like a state's rights versus I'm not sure if you could federally just decriminalize.
It's a schedule one
right.
drug.
So it has to be like rescheduled probably first and then reclassified afterwards.
And then probably go to the states. And I'm fine with that personally.
If
the states want to legalize versus not, that's fine.
I think they're doing. Like, yep. They're already doing that. Like, you're already in Colorado. It's already happening there. I'm seeing it happen around me here in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Like,
but with Trump, there was a chain reaction that set off that we might get Trump in 2020, 2024. I guarantee we are going to have like some super Elizabeth Warren type president, some super leftist president. We are going to ping pong back and forth so far that like 2032, we're going to have robot Reagan. I guarantee it. Like, it's going to go back and forth. Like, I'm putting my money on it now. It's going to be robot Reagan in 2032.
Like, robot Reagan. There you go.
We're just going to ping pong back and forth. Unless we stop being played by political parties. I mean,
yeah. And that's where we come in. That's where our job is, to change people's minds and say like, hey, both parties suck.
So, okay. I know this went way longer than I promised both of you that it would.
You're good.
We live for this.
Yep. That's my job. This is my second job.
Ryan, do you want to tell us? We're brand new guys. do you want to tell everyone, Brian, where they can find you?
Sure. Yeah. So it's pretty easy. I'm at B Nichols Liberty pretty much everywhere. So if you search at B Nichols Liberty on Facebook, Twitter, or minds.com, you'll find me. As for the show, it's briannicholsshow.com. Pretty easy. All 120 episodes plus a bunch of bonus episodes are all there. Great episodes ranging from Matt Kibbe to Justin Amash, Thomas Massey to Jeffrey Tucker, and a slew of amazing Joe Jorgensen, Libertarian presidential candidate, back episode 103. Mutual guest that you and I have both had on, Jacob Hornberger, episode 100. I've had so many great conversations with a lot of really smart people, and honestly, people who are infinitely smarter than I am, and that's really my goal at my show, is to have people on my show to talk about the issues in a way that people care about. And ultimately my main goal is to leave my audience feeling educated and enlightened and informed. So if that's the case, I'd love people to head over, give me a subscribe over on Apple Podcasts. And also, when you're over there, a 5-star rating and review would be very, very appreciated. But one more time, social media at B Nichols Liberty, Twitter, Facebook, minds.com, anywhere you want to go. And email me, brian@briannicholsshow.com.
All right. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. If you ever want to have just normal guests, then Freckles and I are available.
For sure.
We can fill in for someone amazing.
You guys are amazing in your own right. And I'm definitely, so like, I will tell you is that I'm looking to have more libertarian podcasters, you guys, Fritz. I have had the Lions of Liberty crew, but you know, I want to have more of those voices because I think it's what we're doing. This is how we will change the future. And it requires us to reach the people that we're traditionally not reaching out to. And that is honestly why I think what you guys are doing is so great, because you're reaching people, honestly, I could never reach. So that's why I think we need more voices. And I'd love to have you guys on for sure.
And we hope you'll come back, maybe do a live show with us so we can
have
some of the audience. I'm sure they have lots more questions. wish we would have got to more of them today, but we are out of time. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. You can catch us on YouTube every Tuesday, DLive, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor FM, Listen Notes, Google, and Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on our newest collab, thefreedomscoop.com. Be sure to hop on over and check out our content along with some other great creators. Guys, we can't do the show without you, and we appreciate all of you. If you'd like to support the show, click on the link in the description or go to anchor.fm and click the support tab. Your small monthly donation helps to sustain future episodes. Again, I'm Britt. You can find me on Twitter at TweetsByBritt, and my always fabulous co-host is Freckles. You can find her at FreckledLiberty on Twitter. Last but not least, a very big thank you to our guest today, Brian Nichols. You can find him, The Brian Nichols Show, and on Twitter at BNicholsLiberty. Thanks for tuning in. See you guys next time. Bye.